Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, with laundry room designs meant to bring calm to everyday routines. More at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. If you're a regular NPR listener, chances are you know our next guest's voice. It's calm and curious and remarkably agile. He can leap from hosting a conversation on the latest Supreme Court decision to unpacking an off-the-wall trend about fans dressing up as the rapper Pitbull for his concerts as so-called baldies. A quick visual here, Pitbull wears suits and sports a shiny dome. Now, if those clues aren't enough, today's guest is none other than the Ari Shapiro. He's been a host of NPR's All Things Considered for the past decade. Off the clock and off the air, Ari takes to the stage. He's sung with the band Pink Martini. They've played at Carnegie Hall, the Hollywood Bowl, and now Ari's bringing his solo cabaret show to St. Louis, where he'll be performing at City Winery this Saturday evening. Ari Shapiro, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much. It is an honor to be interviewed by the Elaine Cha.
Thank you. Now, Ari, something that we didn't say in that introduction is that you are an author and a best-selling one at that. And this solo cabaret show that you're bringing to St. Louis adapts stories from your 2023 memoir, The Best Strangers in the World. Ari, in what ways do those stories, particularly those that come from your journalism career, make it into your show?
It's been an interesting evolution because I've been in journalism at NPR, frankly, since I graduated from college. I started as an intern, and I had about 20 years of that under my belt before I decided to try writing a memoir, which is a really different form of storytelling. It's much more personal. It's in print, and so on. And then to sort of do this next evolution and take some of that and turn it into a stage show with a bunch of songs by everyone from Paul Simon to Taylor Swift to Stephen Sondheim and weave those stories into something that kind of has a narrative arc in about 90 minutes and connects with an audience. It's been a fun exercise in finding ways to kind of use the same ingredients to create different recipes. And of course, there are new ingredients in there as well. There are stories in this show that I've actually never shared publicly before. Mm. But it's all about connection, whether I'm doing journalism or whether I'm writing a memoir or whether I'm doing this show, Thank You for Listening, at City Winery. It's about trying to help people relate to those who might seem different from them, understand things that might feel a little bit distant, and find a connection, whether it's with the people in the audience or strangers around you.
Mm-hmm. Is there an example of a story from the memoir that is in the show that folks will see?
Yeah, so like in the memoir, there's an entire chapter about the 5 years that I spent covering the White House, which was during the Obama administration. I was a White House correspondent. And my first flight aboard Air Force One was eventful for reasons that people seeing the show will understand. And it's one thing to kind of write it out paragraph by paragraph, but it's another thing to recount the episode. And every time I describe what happened, it's like I can feel my heart pounding again. I like feel myself start sweating again. It was such harrowing might be overstating it, given that I have also covered actual wars. It was not harrowing in that sense. But in the moment, it felt very high stakes. And so to be able to share that and make people laugh and allow people to sort of relax and exhale, I should say this is not a show about the news. I talk about the news every day on All Things Considered, and I love doing it. But this is something very different. This is a chance for everybody to sort of like relax, take a breath, have a drink, laugh a little, and just kind of enjoy an evening out.
Mm-hmm. You've spent many years, as you've just described, you know, telling the stories of other people on the radio. A lot of them have been about, you know, hard news, as we call it. Some of them are more lighthearted stories. But in terms of sharing your own experiences, and you've just talked about the effect that telling the story about being on Air Force One has had on you, what has it been like to share those personal stories in a way that combines song and story?
I think it's another tool in the toolkit. There's something really evolutionarily fundamental about music that connects with people on a visceral level. You know, our heartbeat is a rhythm, and sharing music together is something that humans have been doing for, I'm not an anthropologist, but I'm going to guess, as long as humans have existed. And so getting in a room and being able to experience gorgeous melodies, meaningful lyrics, and have it be part of a narrative. It's one of the things I love so much about the genre of cabaret is that you can really mix things up. Like, for the last 5 years, I've been doing a different cabaret show in conjunction with the actor Alan Cumming, and he and I have toured all over the country with it, and that experience was one of the things that inspired me to create this solo show now with me and this pianist, Henry Kapersky, is appreciating night after night how music and stories combined can create something really special that only ever exists for that one moment in that particular permutation. Like, those people are never all going to be in the same room with each other ever again. And so each night there's something genuine and real and special that is created with everybody going through this together. And so for me, as part of that experience, as one of the creators of it, it feels like a real privilege to be able to share that with people each night.
And to that point that you're making about cabaret, that is such an intimate way of experiencing things with people. I mean, radio broadcasting certainly is intimate too, but you don't get that kind of live feedback from an audience that comes from being, you know, on a stage in front of people.
Yeah.
Do you feed off that feedback in some way? Like, do you improvise at all?
A little bit. I mean, yes. The answer is, if I'm not paying attention to and responding to the audience in the moment, then I'm doing it wrong. You know, there isn't the kind of like crowd work that you would see a stand-up comedian do. I'm not saying, hey, what's your name? What do you do for a living? It's not that kind of a show. But it is something that, because it's in an intimate space and because it is me telling stories that are about me and vulnerable and real and more personal than I ever get on NPR, yeah, I listen and respond, and some nights the show feels more funny and bubbly and uplifting, and some nights it feels more meaningful and moving, and some of that has to do with what's going on in the world at any given moment, because even though I don't talk about the news, we're obviously all living in this soup of everything happening around us all the time. And you're right that radio is a very intimate medium. Like, I'm not orating to hundreds or thousands or millions of people when I'm talking on the radio. It is just me talking to you, whoever the you is, whoever the listener is. And being in a live performance context is different because it's not the singular you, it's the collective us.
Mm-hmm. Before we go any further, I do want to make sure that listeners get a sense of what you sound like on stage. So here is you singing "But Now I'm Back" with Pink Martini.
Oh, how I miss you. I want to kiss you and hold you close from dusk until dawn. So let's just make up, and when you wake up, I promise not to be gone. You know I love you, dream only of you, so please, please cut me some slack. I went away just a couple of days, but now I'm back.
Now he's back. Come inside.
And that's Ari Shapiro, host of NPR's All Things Considered, singing with the Portland, Oregon-based band Pink Martini. Ari Shapiro will perform a solo cabaret show at City Winery this Saturday evening at 7:30. Ari, you were talking about the intimacy of the cabaret solo show. You're singing with Pink Martini, and the story of how you got to that point. I mean, there were lots of fans when you started singing with them, right?
Yeah, so the song that you just played was the first song I ever recorded with Pink Martini. I had been a fan of theirs because I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and they were this little local band that no one outside of Portland had heard of, and I became friends with them. And then as they got bigger, they would come to Washington, D.C., and I would host a barbecue or a brunch or cocktail hour or something for them when they were on tour. And eventually the band leader, the pianist Thomas Lauderdale, asked if I would record a song for the band. They had been writing for a man to sing because Pink Martini's lead singer is a woman. So I went out to Portland, Oregon and recorded that song, "But Now I'm Back." That's the recording you just heard. And then Thomas turned to me and he said, "Well, we need to find a time for you to perform it live with us. So why don't you come to the Hollywood Bowl
Oh, sure. No
right,
big
which
deal.
Which seats 18,000 people. So the first time I ever sang with any band live on stage anywhere was in front of 18,000 people at the Hollywood Bowl. But the good thing about making your debut at the Bowl is that often the show ends with fireworks. And so I feel like even if I was a bit underwhelming, there's the consolation prize that the audience at least got fireworks.
Right. And am I right in remembering that there was something that had to do with a tambourine as well?
Oh, yeah. I was so, by the end of the show, I was so relieved that I had made it through. The final song that Pink Martini ends every show with is Brazil, which is this big dance number. And, you know, people on stage kind of pick up percussion and shake a shaker or whatever. And I grabbed a tambourine, which in the moment I didn't really appreciate is deafeningly loud, especially if you're playing it wrong, which I was. So at the end of that show, Thomas said, "Congratulations, you're barred from ever picking up a tambourine again." But that was 15 years ago, and the ban has been rescinded. So I have since played the tambourine occasionally with Pink Martini when I join them on tour.
Right. And as you said, at least there were fireworks.
At least there were fireworks.
So, Ari, I imagine that as you are doing this tour with Thank You for Listening, that there are folks who come to the show because you are NPR's Ari Shapiro. I mean, does someone introduce you when you go on stage, or do you do that yourself?
No. Henry, my pianist and accompanist, musical director, and co-collaborator, takes the stage, starts playing, and just says, "Please welcome to the stage Ari Shapiro." And I have made public appearances often enough over the years to know that people are going to be surprised by the way I look, the way I sound when I'm singing, all of that stuff. And so just to kind of spoil the joke right here on the air for you, whether I'm giving a lecture or a performance, I trot out the line, "I'm Ari Shapiro, and you all look nothing like what I imagined either."
Okay.
Which I think just kind of like lets everybody relax and acknowledge the elephant in the room, and then we can all move on.
And one of the things that we've talked about on this show with people who are in music in particular is that experiencing something in person, experiencing a person in person, sometimes it entails meeting folks who have no familiarity with you. Is getting a chance to quote, meet new people who have no idea who, you know, the Ari Shapiro of NPR is that part of what makes this show fun for you?
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I will never meet the vast majority of people who listen to All Things Considered, and I'm so grateful to them for tuning in. And I don't take their trust lightly. And I realize that I've inherited this incredible national treasure of this nightly news program. And to be able to say hello to people and to be able to talk with them is something that, you know, whether I'm visiting a local station as part of a fundraising event or doing a cabaret show, getting to meet the faceless audience that I'm speaking to every day is part of the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. And how is it that what you are experiencing with this solo cabaret show and the one that you had mentioned earlier with Alan Cumming, the Och and Oy?
Och and Oy. He's the Scotsman. He's the
yes.
Och. I'm the Jew. I'm the Oy. So that show is called Och and Oy, a Considered Cabaret.
And so how does that inform what you do on All Things Considered?
One of the things that I really love about it is that, and, you know, I've been hosting All Things Considered for 10 years now, and I haven't been doing these cabaret shows nearly that long, but the cabaret shows allow me to let down my hair a little bit and take off the kind of mask of formal news anchor that I wear sometimes as host of All Things Considered. Obviously, even on ATC, I try to be myself and I let my whole personality come out. But my whole personality cannot include certain things like four-letter words, for example.
Oh, sure.
The cabaret show is all ages friendly. It is absolutely, you know, family appropriate. But I'm also, you know, able to say some words that I'm not able to say on public radio. And that's fun for me, and I think also a little bit titillating for the audience. So I do it judiciously, but swearing in that context is kind of a stand-in for the whole range of human emotion and experience that just isn't appropriate for me to bring to a news program like All Things Considered. And so it's fun to allow that other side to come out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So after you've done this touring, mm-hmm. and this is something that our producers and I want to know, do your producers at ATC have to pull you back from the urge maybe that you have to sing?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I strongly feel the separation of church and state. In fact, the other day I got a fundraising promo request that was like, please sing here. And I was like, nope.
Oh, okay. Keep it separate.
They feel like very different worlds to me. And mm-hmm. even though I'm like telling journalism stories when I'm doing the cabaret show, I don't know. It feels like when I'm in this mode, I want to stay in this like kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like very good emotional and labor management.
My mother once said I'm very good at setting boundaries. I'm not sure she meant it as a compliment, but...
Hey, you make it what it is. Now, the name of your solo show is Thank You for Listening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a big part of your memoir, The Best Strangers in the World. And you were talking about what your personality is like. And when I read Thank You for Listening, I see it as a statement, and it's two things. One is an expression of gratitude. And how is that apropos of what your show is, Ari?
Part of the through line of the show is how that phrase, that sentence, thank you for listening, takes on many different meanings, specifically in my life and generally more broadly. And so, as I said, there is a narrative arc and a through line, but that idea of thank you for listening comes back in different ways. And I'm not going to reveal them all here because some of it is kind of like a delightful surprise in the context of the show. Mm. But ultimately, the show is about the power of listening to bridge divides. And ultimately, I think that's kind of what all of my work is about. I think whether I'm with Pink Martini or on All Things Considered, or I'm out in the world reporting, or I'm writing a memoir and the listening is metaphorical because you're reading, I think it's about the power of paying attention to people to overcome the obstacles that we imagine exist that divide us.
Now, another way that I read Thank You for Listening, Ari, is as a preemptive appreciation, like not presumption or passive aggression, you know, the way that thanks in advance, like in an email, sometimes can come off.
Yeah.
But as an expression of optimism and an indication that you've got faith that audience members are going to get what you're doing. Am I off the mark with that?
You're not at all. There is something about the decision to show up and pay attention that is so profound. I was doing an interview not long ago with the director of a documentary about psychics in New York. The documentary was called Look Into My Eyes. I promise this will be relevant. And I had watched the movie and I had done my research and I'd prepared my questions, but it was only like 80% of the way through the conversation that I kind of had this light bulb moment. And I said to the director, I sort of think that 85, 95% of the work is just sitting down and paying attention. And whether it is therapy or confession or a psychic reading or any number of other things, like a tarot card experience, like just tuning the noise out and sitting with someone and paying attention and listening to them is a profound act that unlocks all kinds of powerful potential. And whether you believe in psychics or not, and by the way, psychics also do figure into my show, but that's another story. Whether you believe in psychics or not, whether you believe in religion or not, whether you believe in the value of therapy or meditation or not, just that act of listening is incredibly powerful.
And listening without judgment.
Yeah, we all have judgments. And I think part of the challenge that we all face is recognizing the judgments that pop into our head and finding ways to set them aside or incorporate them and recognize them and move past them. But what I try to do when I especially am out in a distant country reporting a story about a place that may seem wildly different from the experience of listeners who are going to hear the story on NPR is I try to find something that will get past that immediate sense of judgment or distance or whatever that obstacle is so that people can relate. Like, one story that I tell in the memoir that isn't in the cabaret show is about when I was in this coastal city in Turkey where Syrian refugees were trying to get to Europe, and I found this little cafe where the owner had put out these folding tables with power strips, and all of these Syrian refugees were plugging their phones in to recharge. And I thought that was such a useful detail because people commuting home from work listening to All Things Considered might not think that they can relate to the idea of being a Syrian refugee. But the idea of looking for a place to charge your phone is something, an experience we've all had, something we can all relate to. And that specific particular detail unlocks an empathetic potential that allows people to connect to a story that they may otherwise think they have no connection to.
Ari, another song that you have performed with Pink Martini is called Finis Madi.
Finis Madi Fitef Hawak Albal Matin Sandish Anna in illek fisual Bardun tafe Waheshni mataharam Fisnin sabart Lohobira Womri ra Waya fil wahdadi.
And that is Finis Madi. This is a song, Ari, whose lyrics, written by Iyad Qasem, are in Arabic, and this is a song that you performed after Qasem himself introduced it and you at a festival in Lebanon back in 2017. You were talking earlier about understanding, about empathy. How do those maybe relate to the way that your performing this song came about?
You know, Iyad has since passed away, but he wrote the lyrics to this song thinking about the experience that his parents as Palestinian refugees in Jordan had. And the title Finis Madi means in the sweet summer breeze. And he took the title from something his mother used to say, which is there's no breeze as sweet as the breeze of home. And when Iyad was still alive, he would come on tour with Pink Martini and he would introduce the song and he would introduce me. And he would talk about how meaningful it was to him to have his American Jewish friend, Ari Shapiro, singing this song. I would come out and he would give me a hug and then I would sing the song. And it's part of a larger project, I think you could say, that Pink Martini has, which is that we sing in dozens of different languages. And so inevitably, if you go to a Pink Martini show, you are going to hear songs in languages that you don't understand. And you are hopefully going to laugh and clap and sway and dance along with them, even if you don't know the words. And so when we have been in Greece, we have sung songs in Turkish. Greece and Turkey don't have a great relationship. When we've been in South Korea, we have sung songs in Japanese. Similarly, those are two countries that have a fraught history. And yet the ability of audiences to connect through music is another way of what we've been talking about, kind of overcoming those barriers, getting past our preconceived differences, and finding some common ground that we can begin to build something from.
Mm-hmm. Something that was also interesting to me about this song is that it is a rewriting of Soledad, mm-hmm. which is a Spanish language song from Pink Martini's very first album.
Mm-hmm.
How much of what you do as a singer and a performer first, Ari, do you feel is an act of interpretation and translation?
Oh, so much. I mean, even though when I'm telling a story on the radio, it's not about me, I think if I'm doing my job at my best, I'm telling the story in a way that only I would tell it. And a different person doing the same reporting project would come away with a different story, different words that sound like they're coming out of their mouth. Everything I do is, on some level, an act of interpretation. And if it weren't, then AI could do what we do. Maybe someday AI will. But I think that human element of what each individual brings to it, whether it's the writer, the pianist, the performer, the journalist, has our own essential fingerprints on it in some way.
Ari, this summer tour that you're on now, it started in Nashua, New Hampshire. You've been to Lexington, Nashville, Atlanta, Chicago, and you'll be in St. Louis before the tour's finale in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So how has performing and listening from the cabaret stage and, you know, all that traveling in between equipped you with something that you know that you're going to be carrying into what you'll be doing on ATC?
Living and working in Washington, D.C., you hear the phrase inside the beltway a lot, which is a reference to the bubble that those of us in the Capitol can sometimes get into. And for me, being out in the country, in the world, whether it is to report stories or to perform this show, Thank You for Listening, as I'm doing at the City Wineries that you just mentioned, allows me to reframe my perspective, see things through the eyes of someone else, hear from people who I wouldn't otherwise have a chance to meet. And that kind of refills my gas tank in a way that allows me to go back inside the beltway and do the work that I do every day with a slightly different outlook on the things that I'm reporting on.
And what is the thing that you have enjoyed most so far with this tour?
I feel every time I perform the show like Henry on the piano and I and the audience create something together that exists just for that one moment and then disappears. And that act of creation feels so fragile and meaningful and wild. It's the privilege every time I get to do it. And so I just go into it with this sense of how lucky are we to be able to all have this experience together.
Ari Shapiro is a journalist and host for NPR's All Things Considered. He'll be in St. Louis this Saturday evening at City Winery to perform his solo cabaret show, Ari Shapiro, Thank You for Listening. Ticket info is at citywinery.com. Ari Shapiro, thank you so much for joining us today.
I've enjoyed the conversation so much. Thank you, Elaine.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
And I, Elaine Shaw. Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.